Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Letter Lords. Now the laugh's back.
Yeah, it was a bit of a token gesture, to be honest, Jim. It wasn't the best.
I think you phoned that one in, or at least Skyped it in.
Hi, Jim.
Hi, Bob. How are you, sir?
I'm all right. Who are you?
I am Jim Cameron from the Crinoid Podcast, and you?
I am Bob Fleming from the Proctor Who Podcast. Yeah, that was well professional in that.
As always,
well rehearsed. Yeah.
Everything you do is carefully rehearsed. That must be obvious by now.
Happy New Year, Jim.
Yes, and a Happy New Year to you too.
Indeed. Are you well?
I'm very well, thanks. Yourself?
Oh, not too shabby. So we're talking about them. By the way, yeah, let's tell people what we do. We're the Letter Lords, as Jim said there. We talk about the letters that are in Doctor Who magazine, in the Galaxy Forum. We also talk about other stuff within the magazine, because sometimes the letters are a bit sparse, to say the very least. Mm-hmm. So hence that makes us the Letters Lords. And on this one, Jim, which one are we on? Which magazine are we?
On the Christmas Special, which features a picture from the Christmas Special on the front.
It does, yes.
Hence the name, the Christmas Special, I expect. So, yeah.
Big hint.
That's the one. Issue 507, for those of a numerical bent.
Yeah, it's a weighty one, isn't it, this one? It feels quite fat.
Yes, a bumper Christmas edition.
I don't know if it's a higher GSM of paper, higher grammage of paper, or genuinely is more pages.
I think a bit of both, perhaps.
Bit of a pep for your bunts right there.
Yes, indeed. Well, let's, as we're on the subject of the Christmas Special, let's talk about the Christmas Special that aired on Christmas Day.
Why the hell not?
The return of Dr. Mysterio.
It was all right, wasn't it?
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Did you enjoy it or just all right enjoy it?
A bit more than all right enjoy, actually. Yeah, I didn't get around to seeing it until, was it Tuesday after Christmas? Because of, you know, family commitments and stuff like that. It doesn't mean I'm a bad fan, honest. I didn't want to watch it with people shouting and criticising and all that kind of stuff.
Well, I gave myself 5 lashings across the back because I didn't start watching it till 6 p.m. on Christmas Day. 15 minutes late. Terrible Who fandom.
Yeah, well, I hear you lash yourself out of choice anyway, don't you?
The virgins be going mental at me.
I don't know
what they'll be saying about you, Jim Cameron.
Not printable, probably.
I think that's good, though, because the pressure was kind of off. Because I think I put too much pressure on this episode, because obviously we've not had New Who for a year.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, it is, yeah. So I was anticipating a lot more than what was presented on television. Not that it was bad. I'm not going to say that at all. I've given it 2 watches, which is more than The Husbands of River Song. So that's not too bad, I don't think. I enjoyed it more the second time, but it was okay. Mm. My issue is, being a massive sort of superhero fan, and there's so much quality superhero-ness in all mediums, so like television, comic books, you know, whatever, that it was, you know, it was nice for Doctor Who to try it, that sort of genre, but hopefully we'll never do it again. That's the sort of camp I'm in. It was okay. Because for me, the Doctor is the ultimate superhero. He's my superhero.
Yeah.
He's the best superhero ever of all time. And I think that was always possibly the potential issue when dealing with superheroes. I think they did it quite clever, so they didn't get too deep into the hero world, because it was just basically a massive hammy Marvel thing, wasn't it? Which was fun and fine. I mean, I always like a lot more in my superheroes, you know, a lot more depth, like I do in my Doctor Who, and this give neither. Do you know what I mean?
Mm. Well, this is very much based more on the kind of Christopher Reeve Superman films, isn't
it? Yeah.
Than it is, you know, the modern stuff, which is kind of deeper and has more kind of subtext and stuff, doesn't it?
Mm.
So I think I think Moffat did what he usually does, which is pick something that people watch over Christmas, and Russell T. Davies as well, to be honest.
Yeah.
Pick things that, you know, are popular at Christmas and then gives them a Doctor Who slant, which I think is what he did here.
Yeah.
I myself are not particularly interested in superhero stuff. I don't mind it. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just, you know, not something that floats my boat particularly, although I'm kind of aware of a lot of the tropes and stuff. And it was good to see them included here and sometimes kind of affectionately mocked here and there, weren't they? Some of these superhero cliches. And I thought it was very enjoyable. And Streets and Streets ahead of the Husbands of River Song.
Oh, God, yeah.
Which I didn't find funny, moving, exciting, or anything at all, really. But this I found, it wasn't particularly exciting. It was okay, but there was not a lot of tension here. But then, you know, it's not a dark, grim thing, is it?
No.
When shown at Christmas. But I did think it was very funny. The script was very funny. The performances were good. I thought Capaldi was excellent.
Well, Capaldi was, I mean, he is the Doctor now for me. The Doctor. Of all the new Doctors,
oh, right,
I think he's the Doctor.
Yeah, me too.
In fact, funny enough, you slagging off superheroes there, Jim, not particularly being keen on them.
I don't remember slagging them off.
Well, maybe a little bit. hear me out. I was down the British Legion the other day with Spider-Man, Ant-Man, Batman, and Zebra. Don't know who he is, just invented him. And they were very complimentary about you. They'd be quite upset to hear that you'd be slagging them off. That's all I'm saying. And they're superheroes, Jim. I'd be scared.
I should put an extra bolt on my door tonight.
It'll take more than a bolt. what I was going to say, ask you was, because they sort of tried to link it into Last Christmas, which was obviously a year ago. Mm. That didn't do anything for me, but I think that's because the previous Christmas special didn't do anything for me either. Mm. But I quite things to ask you. Matt Lucas, your thoughts?
Well, yeah, I mean, I wasn't... Yeah, as I say, I wasn't keen on the episode in which he first appeared, and he didn't really do much in it. I think perhaps he was one of the more interesting things in that episode, but not to say that he was particularly interesting. But
no.
This time around, I enjoyed him. I thought his performance was pitched just about right, I think. I don't think he was too silly. He had some slightly silly things to do, but I think he handled them well. It'd be interesting to see how he handles some more dramatic stuff. But in general, I found, you know, the lines he was given were funny, and I think he delivered them well. And it's quite an interesting new dynamic to have this sort of a kind of valet, or however you pronounce it, for the Doctor, you know, kind of helping him, you know, in what he does. It reminds me a little bit of...
Frank Skinner.
A little bit of Frank Skinner's character, but it reminds me of Bostock and Orsini, Orsini from The Revelation of the Daleks. You know, it's that kind of... relationship, I suppose. I expect Nardole is slightly less smelly.
Well, I thought... he's a great actor. Great actor / comedian.
Mm.
He didn't get that much time on screen to judge, really.
No.
But potentially, I think them two could be absolutely brilliant. I think it's ace having a male alien on the TARDIS.
Yeah.
I think that's a really good thing. I'm quite excited about seeing them together in the new series.
Yeah, I think so. Is he the first male alien since Turlough?
Yes, he will be. Yeah, he will be, because we've not had one since, have we?
Hmm.
Well, Captain Jack was... Well, he was kind of human, I suppose, but then he got a bit weird, didn't he, so...
Yeah, perhaps he wasn't human. I don't know. I'm not really interested.
He wasn't a proper alien.
No, he wasn't. No, he didn't have pointy ears or anything.
Well, yeah. Well, I think it's a kind of a... Definitely a thumbs up from you and a... it was all right from me. I'm looking forward to the new series, though. It looks awesome. The clips at the end, I was buzzing a lot. I was very happy.
Yeah, I was as well. The clips we see look beautifully shot, don't they? The whole
stunning
production looks great, isn't it? Mm. And obviously, there's going to be quite a lot of Nardole and quite a lot of Bill. So I think it is going to be more comedic than it has been in the past, which I don't always find Stephen Moffat funny, but I do find him funny quite a lot. So
yeah.
Yeah, I'm trepidatiously looking forward to it.
Well, yeah, I am too. I think it looks great, and I think it's going to be a great hurrah from, in my opinion, I'm going to go and say it, Jim, the best producer / script editor on Doctor Who ever. Deal with that, everybody. Yeah, I'm going to go down that road. He's done a lot. He's tried a lot. And his tenure has been longer, I think, than anyone else, hasn't it? It's sort of... script editor and producer, really. Yeah, and he's been brilliant. I think he's been awesome. He's done some brilliant Doctor Who. It's time for a change, as it always is, but yeah, thank you, Stephen.
Yeah, I mean, I don't love all of his stuff he's done, but I do love quite a lot of it. I'd certainly prefer his era more than I do RTD's.
Mm.
And it is time for a change, but, you know, I'm not going to look back on the Moffat era thinking, you know, that was awful or anything.
No, classic stuff. Classic stuff in there.
Yeah, some very good stuff in there and some very good scripts. And some interesting directions it's gone in.
Mm.
So, shall we leave that there?
Yeah, we've done our Christmas bit.
We're all fed up with Christmas now, aren't we? January the 4th as we record.
So. Yeah. Everyone is, Jim. So let's talk some letters.
Yes, that's kind of why we're here. Let's start with Steve Trump. Hopefully no relation. He's from Upminster. I'm not going to read all the letter out because it's quite long, but there's a couple of paragraphs I will pluck out. He says, growing up in the 60s, I gradually became aware of Doctor Who on Saturday nights. Patrick Troughton was the first Doctor I remember. It was the eerie opening credits that gripped me, made me anxious about whatever monsters were about to be unleashed. The Daleks playing trains, the Yeti bound up in chains coming to life and breaking free, the first Ice Warrior coming to life, the Macra, and best of all, the climax to episode one of Fury from the Deep. Skipping ahead, it is very difficult to convey to a contemporary audience just what impact Doctor Who monster stories had on youngsters like myself. Episodes received just one showing, which I saw on a poor quality small screen black and white TV set, which to me, unaccustomed with mass sci-fi, seemed so convincingly real at the time. So, that, I think, should lead us into a discussion of our earliest memories of Doctor Who, Bob.
Well, my memory... Again, I've talked about this quite a lot, I think, you know, on here and, you know, on Prog to Who. The best thing about Doctor Who was the relationship I formed with my older cousin, Stephen, who is the person that introduced me to Doctor Who. And it was fabulous learning and watching all the sort of Doctor Who he had. And it was when Doctor Who was still on telly, you know, during the Peter Davison, Colin Baker, and particularly the Sylvester McCoy era, when I properly embraced Doctor Who. Mm. But I was very fortunate because I didn't just watch Doctor Who on the telly. You know, I had the videos he had. So I think my first memory of Doctor Who properly was the Five Doctors.
Mm-hmm.
So I had them all. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, Richard Herndon was my first Doctor, really, I think. You know, like my first...
numerically.
Numerical Doctor, yeah.
Mm.
And it was just a brilliant... I was just mesmerised. I couldn't get enough of anything to do with Doctor Who and Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy when I was really young as well. So I didn't kind of get it, but I got the sort of fantasy of it and just the imagination of it. And my scariest moment ever in Doctor Who was the invasion of time when it sort of changes in the Sontarans. I mean, this is ridiculous on reflection because it's crap, isn't it? The Sontarans are awful and the stories, it's okay. But yeah, when the Sontarans invade Gallifrey, I absolutely shit my ginger pants. It was, honestly, that is my ultimate scariest moment in Doctor Who ever. And that's pathetic, I know. But yeah, I mean, it's just so imaginative. And I think that's, as a child, it was stunning. So, for example, when I was in my very early teens, and I started dating girls, and, you know, we'd split up and I'd be very upset and all that kind of stuff. Or any time I was upset, particularly my sort of early teens, I'd just relentlessly watch Doctor Who.
Yeah, comfort Who.
Yeah, videos of Doctor Who. In fact, I watched Trial of the Time Lord in one day after I split with, you know, whatever. You know, I had a...
Blimey, I thought I'd finish you off, wouldn't it?
But I loved it. And I was, you know, yeah, Trial of Time on the box set was amazing. You know, I was like, just blew my mind the fact that the Valiard was a doctor and all this kind of stuff, which I know it's terrible now. But back then, you know, it was amazing. So Doctor Who has always been my sort of pick-me-up and all that kind of stuff.
Mm.
And I fell out of love with it, I think, like, not everyone did, but I think quite a few people did, as you get a bit older, sort of late teens, maybe early 20s.
Yeah.
And then just... you find it again and you realise how brilliant it is and all them kind of things. But yeah, Doctor Who's been my best friends ever since I was a very small child. There's some very, very fond memories for me, not just from the show itself, but from family and sort of protecting my sanity, yeah. I think. You know, it's fabulous.
Mm. Well, that's an interesting story, and I think, you know, one that's in common with quite a lot of Doctor Who fans, I think.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly something that you turn to, isn't it, when you're low or whatever, and you think...
Yeah.
The other thing is if you know Doctor Who well, there's a story for every occasion, isn't there?
Mm.
And you think, oh, I'm in the mood for this, I'm in the mood for that, and you find it and watch it. And it's always there for you.
You can lose yourself. And you're saying, who's yourself?
Oh, I like it.
Yeah, see what I did there, Jim?
Clever, yeah.
But it's the best escape. You know, like fantasy is... Or, you know, science fiction, fantasy, whatever. It's an escape from reality.
Yeah.
And sometimes you need that.
Mm.
And Doctor Who is the pinnacle for me of that escapism.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you mentioned family, didn't you, in that? And, you know, I was lucky enough to have a brother, dad. In fact, the rest of the family would watch as well. I don't think my mum did, but I think everyone else did. I've got two sisters and one brother, and we'd all sit down and watch it with my dad. And, you know, so you kind of have the fond, sort of nostalgic memories of doing something together as a family. And I think that kind of appointment TV is, you know, is on the wane, isn't it, nowadays, with everyone watching stuff when they want to watch it. But in terms of earliest memories, I'm, of course, horrendously ancient. So I do have I have a kind of race memory of the demons, in that I can just about remember.
Really?
Yeah, I can just about remember something. Jesus, looking down I remembered it as being in a church. Of course, obviously it's in a crypt below a church. But I remembered something in a church looking down at someone who was terrified of it. And very little memories of the rest of it, but that kind of stuck in my head. But then I have quite strong memories of the Ogrons and stuff in The Day of the Daleks, which is the next story in the following season, wasn't it? To open the following season. And quite strong memories of the rest of that. And I mean, I remember seeing when Alpha Centauri came back, I recognise her, him, it. So I obviously had memories of Curse of Peladon when I was watching Monster of Peladon. And I remember the sea devils coming out of the sea. I remember that diving bell, that diving bell being empty when it got pulled up. You know, the doctor was in it and it got captured by the sea devils. I remember it being empty. And I remember it being an amazing moment, but I didn't understand why.
That's class. Oh, I've got a little tip. I've got a little tip for you.
Yeah.
Velcro. So, you know, your bus pass, your free bus pass you've got at your age, you can get a bit of Velcro and stick it to your Zimmer frame, so it's easy for you hobbling on the bus.
God bless you, sir. That's an invaluable tip for me. Cheers.
I bet it was. But I don't know what you were doing then. I don't want to know.
It's my false teeth, Gav.
That is, sounds wrong. But that's awesome. I mean, these, like, the sea devils coming out of the sea and stuff like that, that was, like, big memories. Mm. You know, even well, whatever it was when I'd have seen that.
Yeah.
Probably in the late 80s, early 90s. In fact, it was when it was on telly, for example. That was stunning then to me as a kid. It was fantastic. And that was, you know, 10, 15 years later, whatever it was. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And of course, TV had moved on by then, but it was still cryptic.
Yeah. It's class.
Yes.
Doctor Who, eh? Oh, hey. Doctor Who.
Those guys.
Well, I think there's a lot of, you know, bits you can pick out of you from all of Doctor Who.
Yeah.
But yeah, weirdly, my key moments are from really crap adventures. Like I said, the invasion of time with the Sontarans being revealed. And
well, that was a huge moment for me because, you know, I thought this, I didn't like the Doctor being all mental at the beginning.
So it was as
I
well, wasn't it?
Yeah, I wasn't enjoying that. And the Vardens were horrendous, disappointing.
Terrible.
I mean, yeah. Even when you got sort of like silvery shower curtains,
yeah.
When they're revealed, they're even more boring than that. I thought, this is awful, this. And then by this stage, because of the time we were in the Sontaran experiment, I was absolutely scared shitless of the Sontarans.
And they were.
So when they appeared, of course, at the end of that episode, you don't realise that the lead Sontaran's going to be some sort of cockney oaf. But
it was pretty
so
awful,
that particular moment before he starts talking, yeah, you know, it was absolutely terrifying when they turned up on Gallifrey ready to take it over. That's a pretty amazing moment. Of course, the rest of it doesn't quite live up to that. But, you know, it's those moments, and you remember moments more than you remember complete stories, don't you, particularly when you're younger?
You do. You do. It is the moments as a kid that you remember. Mm. But I think what actually the overall first adventure I remember quite intensely was Death to the Dalek, because that was an early VHS release. And that was... It's grim, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's very, very grim all the way through. Mm. And it's kind of like the Daleks are surviving as well.
Yeah.
It was just a very eerie adventure, and one I love still to this day.
Yeah, me too. It's very underrated. It's not very well thought of by most people. I think it's a cracker.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It is brilliant. And there's many more like that, Jim. We could go on all day.
We could, but we can't.
Let's move on to another letter.
Mm.
So this one is from John Castles from Sex Mundum. he's referring to the Jonathan Morris. Until Jonathan Morris well-researched fact or fiction on the end of the world in DWM 506, I had no idea that the scene between Rose and plumber Raffaello, is it Raffaello?
I can't remember.
was a late addition to the episode and was essentially padding. Yeah, it showed us more of Rose's caring nature and set out the revive show's stall with the chilling death of a sympathetic character at the hands of an intriguing menace. It's not surprising that it took me over 11 years to realise the trick because it was exquisite. Piece of craftsmanship. Writer Russell T. Davis really was at the top of his game, even this early into the rebooted show. It's no wonder that was such a success. So basically referring to these little characters that RTD put in so well to give you a bit more buy-in or care with the show, or to sort of reveal characters in a bit more depth. And I remember this very well, this little blue woman getting killed by the spiders. And it did. It was a very emotional, emotional scene. And he was always quite good at that. Not just sort of one-off characters or, you know, putting bits in to keep the audience gripped and caring and all the other bits he was trying to achieve, but just in general, his sort of, relationship, personal dialogue and things like that.
Mm.
That's what he was, you know, he's so good at. And the sort of really campy action rubbish, do you know what I mean? It was all like quite explosive and big and all that kind of stuff. But his relationships, his character, or the characters that he wrote were fantastic and stuff like that's brilliant. And it's throughout all of New Who. And it does give you an insight, like Joe's saying there, into the main characters as well.
Mm.
But yeah, I do remember that quite vividly, the little blue lady getting killed by the spider thing.
Yeah, me too. I mean, it's interesting that in certainly it seemed when it started out, the 45-minute format seemed to us Long in the Tooth classic fans seemed like a very sort of truncated format.
Revolutionary, really, wasn't it? Really, because
we
had 45 minutes during the Colin Baker tenure.
Mm.
It was three parts of 45 minutes. When it was long, it was still like a six-parter, whereas this was like, bang, get it in quick. And it was like, oh, my God, we've only got Doctor Who on for 45 minutes on telly.
Yeah, well, the 45 minutes, it seemed to drag. Everything seemed to go slower when they were in the Colin Baker era, the 45 minutes.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah, when you're trying to tell a whole story in 45 minutes, you know, you really have to bounce along quickly, don't you? To still find time to put in these little character moments and to make it matter to you when somebody dies that you've only just met is a very skillful thing to do. Particularly, I mean, I'm not going to have a go at Moffat about this, but I mean, I don't think he does it as well.
No, he doesn't. His strength lies in the complication of the plot.
Yes.
Or the complexity of, not the complication, the complexity.
Well, both
of the
really.
Plot. Yeah. But one thing, I mean, I've never actually thought of that before until I read that letter and you sort of mentioned about it, that he did do that a lot.
Mm.
Every character that died, I think, in Doctor Who under RTD, you cared about, no matter how little or how long screen time they got. You know, if they died, you give a shit.
Mm.
And I think with Moffat, you don't really care. Because to be honest, because no one f***ing dies anyway, do they? They all come back anyway, so...
Well, that's the thing. I mean, there's two problems there, aren't there? One is that perhaps the characters aren't quite as well depicted. And firstly, no one really dies, even other members of the cast, that you don't get many deaths in Moffat, really, compared to Russell T. Davis. So I think you should chuck in a death if you thought things were kind of coming to some sort of a lull. But you don't get many deaths in Stephen Moffat, so that's not necessarily a bad thing. But when the deaths do happen, they have to count. And, of course, he's pulled the rug from under us so many times that, you know, you can't be invested in the deaths as much as you would have done in the Russell T. Davis era because you cannot trust people to stay dead.
No,
and
exactly.
I think this is reaping... He's having the same problem with Sherlock as well. I mean, ever since Sherlock came back from the apparent dead with no real explanation, I think a lot of people have lost a level of interest with the show there.
Well, no, but the thing about differences with Sherlock, it's based on... Because I'm a massive Sherlock Holmes fan, you see. Read all the books and that, Jim, you see.
Right.
And that is a genuine story. So Sherlock Holmes does die, he does come back. So that's based on...
What, the Reich and back four thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, but isn't there an explanation for it?
Yes, there is.
Yeah, but the problem with this one is there isn't any explanation, is it?
Good point.
They muck about with it so much, you know, they give you lots of possible explanations and no one's prepared to commit themselves to what actually happened. I mean, I'm no Sherlock... You know, expert or anything, but
you're quite right. I mean, the explanation is very brief in the book, and it's like you say, it's a bit vague on the telly.
Yeah,
but yeah, RTD. I think I'm going to give you my favourite RTD episode, shall I?
Okay,
like penned by him, Boomtown. I think it's a beautiful piece.
Yeah,
I love the way the Doctor has to confront an adversary or a nemesis emotionally. And he has to come to terms with it. I think it's beautiful. I've never seen anything like that in Doctor Who before or since. And that is definitely by far my favourite RTD scripted episode. Boomtown.
Yeah, well, it's interesting you say that, because that really stood out to me in that first series. Because I mean, I didn't like the Slitheen at all from that first two parts.
Terrible, yeah.
But I think this kind of rescued them a little bit. This thing, and it like you say, you hadn't seen anything like that before. You hadn't seen a character study of, you know, what it's like from the alien point of view for one thing. You know, how they would consider the Doctor, and then you know, we're quite happy to see the Doctor sort of. Not necessarily directly destroy aliens, but, you know, lead to their destruction.
Yeah, I think it's something that was overdue, really. It was kind of like, why have we not seen this before? I'm pleased we've sort of seen it now, seen, you know, the other side of it. Bit like in Battlestar Galactica. Have you seen Battlestar Galactica, Jim?
No, I've been saving the new series I haven't got around to.
Right, I won't tell you. It's the greatest TV show after Doctor Who and Star Trek. Yeah, you see it from the Cylons' point of view in a sort of spin-off special, things like that. It's just. I think it's required to see both sides of it, so then you have affinity to both sides.
Mm.
Yeah, it makes a big difference. But I have to tell you what I've noticed in this 45-minute format thing we were touching on before is that it sort of runs. So the first half an hour is episode one of Classic Who. Do you know what I mean? It's all coming.
Yeah.
It's all just pacing along nicely, da, 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 and that's sort of 15, 12, 10 minutes. It all goes bang together. Now, I've been watching a lot of Star Trek recently, particularly Deep Space Nine. So I've watched all of Next Generation in quite a close, you know, session. Deep Space Nine do the same with Enterprise. They're all the same. And Doctor Who is based on the same format. I think 45-minute shows are based on this format of half an hour of just, you know, setting it up to like 15, 12, 10 minutes at the end, bang. And it works brilliantly well, but it's becoming more and more obvious the more I'm watching so intently, you know, Star Trek and stuff like that in this format. And it works brilliantly well. It does work brilliantly well. And that's why these American TV shows have such great success. And I believe that's why it was adopted by RTD to do that format. It works. It works brilliantly well.
And the other thing, of course, it will fit into an hour's scheduling with adverts on American TV, isn't it? Or
exactly.
any commercial channels. I mean, that's why the Americans do it, and that's why we do it. We try and sell stuff to them. So, yeah, it's an accepted format, but it was a surprise when it turned up in Doctor Who, because, of course, we never had it that way before. But, yeah, I mean, if you marshal your resources, you can still get character into those speeded-up stories and... you know, of the writers we had so far in New Who, then Russell T. Davies is right up there at the top, at the people who do their best.
Absolutely. And also, I prefer two-parters anyway.
I do.
I love more Doctor Who for my money. Right. Well, here's to the future, Jim.
Here's to the future. Ah, I see what you've done there.
Yeah.
You clever sausage.
I am. I'm a professional podcaster, Jim. Professional podcaster.
You are. So I heard. Yeah. I didn't believe it, but I heard it. Here's to the future is the heading above our final letter for this month. It's from Dan Jacobs from Columbia, US of A. Now that the presidential election here in the USA is over, a lot of us are worried and even scared about what might happen next. But I believe that Doctor Who fans from America and the UK can find hope together. There is strength in goodness and imagination, and like the Doctor, we are better when we're not alone. As much as I would love to jump in the TARDIS and skip ahead 4 years, I can't. So to all Doctor Who fans out there, let us unite. Let's not let the darkness win. I think the Doctor would want that.
Yeah, he would.
Well, at the start of what promises to be another tempestuous year in world politics...
Yeah.
It's an interesting letter to receive, isn't it?
It is. I mean, for me, politics is, for me, nothing to do with Doctor Who, which is completely incorrect. Doctor Who, particularly in the 80s, under Andrew Cartmell, very politically heavy. But that was more of a time of rebellion, wasn't it? Do you know what I mean? Against the sort of the conservatives and that kind of stuff. So it was all tinged with a bit of politics.
Mm.
70s as well. I mean, I think... looking back on Doctor Who, it's been tinged with what's relevant.
Yeah.
So, for example, the classic line of Terry Nation as a writer, he was just coming out, they were coming out the arse end of World War II. He created the Daleks, which were Nazis. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
That was something that was obviously close to his heart and he could write about because he'd experienced it. Malcolm Hull, you know, he was very much into the you know, the green side of things and stuff like that, the environment, which all his scripts were kind of tinged with as well.
Well, he was a card-carrying communist as well, wasn't he, Malcolm Hulk?
So, he was.
Yeah,
he was.
That certainly comes through.
So it's always had this, you know, if you want to look for it, it's like I say, it's a lot more obvious, I think, in Cartmell's Doctor Who. But there's always a tinge of politics or what's relevant at the time. If you want to pick it up, and if you don't want to pick it up, you don't have to. It's not particularly put in your face, really. I know there's maybe certain parts that are, but predominantly it's maintained. It's, you know, I think it's a family show. But yeah, if you want to find anything in a show, I suppose you can find it. Do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think in the 70s and 80s stuff, it was perhaps, well, certainly 70s was more kind of subtext, wasn't it? So, I mean, Barry Letts would be talking about environmental issues. And then, you know, you had quite a balanced team because Terence Dix appears to be, you know, on the right side of the right wing side of things.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're very big mates, and, you know, and it wasn't really party politics that you were getting in the 70s. I mean, you got slightly more anti-Thatcher rhetoric, I guess, although it was quite submerged. You got that in the Cartmell era.
Mm.
And, you know, politics now, I mean, in New Who, it's, you know, you can't put a slant in it other than, you know, the Doctor is a citizen of the universe still.
He is, but I mean, I beg to differ with that because you've got the Zygon inversion, which I think it's more, not necessarily political, I think it's more of the time. So terrorism, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's a hot, you know, it's a hot political issue. Again, it's not particularly a party thing, is it?
No, that's what I mean. It's the differential, that's what I'm trying to say. There's a, yeah. You know, these political elements, if you want to look at them, it depends how you look at them. But in Doctor Who, I think they do things that are more relevant to the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just feel... it's something I've been contemplating a lot. I'm going to talk about politics for the first time on a Doctor Who podcast because it's something I never, you know, it's something that I think it's always a bit tempestuous to speak about and people will always have a different opinion. Yeah. I mean, I'll be brutally honest. I'm ignorant when it comes to politics. I think they're all f***ers, all of them. You know what I mean? I think there's very few out of all of them that have a backbone or a decent bone in their body.
Mm.
Which is why I get very irritated. And I think, I mean, there's been a massive political shift and change, and I think people are demanding a change, which is why Brexit happened, which is why Trump is the president of America. And I think these people that have been asked in these polls, you know, who you're voting for, are very shy to say I'm going to vote for Brexit, are very shy to say I'm going to vote for Donald Trump, because of what people like me, and I'm going to blame myself as part of this problem, telling them that they are f***ing stupid. Why are you voting for Brexit? Why are you voting for Donald Trump? But I think they're sick of people like me telling them they're stupid. And I think they're sick of being told what to do by these absolute idiots, you know, these politicians who are just lying bastards, all of them.
Mm.
Well, most of them. I'd say 99.9% of them are. They're not voting for that particular thing. They're not voting for Brexit. They're not voting for Trump. They're voting for, you know, you, basically. You're going to have to do a lot of beeping. But, you know, and I think that's the issue. My God, I've just talked about politics in a podcast, which has got absolutely nothing to do with politics. It's to do with Doctor Who. So, yeah, my belief is it's just like people are wanting a change.
Yeah.
And they're doing it in a way that, you know, it's the only way they feel they can make a change, or the only way they know. And that's happened many times in human history. And that change has always been dramatically for the worst. But yeah, I'm blaming people like myself who are quite vocal about, you know, what they think about people who do vote in this way or vote for these things.
Mm.
You know, but the problem is you can try and put across the most factual point of view wherever you want to. They're not going to listen. They're just sick. People are just sick of it. People are just sick of these politicians lying and all that kind of thing. Anyway, I'm going to shut up wittering now, Joe. Apologies. I went on a bit of a rant there.
No, not at all. That's fine. I'll probably try and stop myself going on a rant if I can. Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, people want to change. People don't have any faith in politicians anymore. And that kind of, rightly or wrongly, kind of extends to anyone who's providing any kind of facts from a kind of establishment side of things. You know, people aren't interested in facts. They're interested in how they feel. And certain newspapers are telling people how to feel, and they're saying the kind of things that they want to hear. And when the chance comes to vote for something, these people will make the anti-establishment vote, but that isn't necessarily what they're voting about.
No.
And the results are not necessarily going to do them any favours at all. And much the same in America, I think. I don't think many of the rabid Trump fans are going to be particularly well served by him as a president. That remains to be seen. Yeah. It remains to be seen if Brexit does anybody any good in this country. But anchoring it back to Doctor Who.
Oh, yeah, Doctor Who. Yes, that's what I heard.
Remember
you.
That? It is. I'm going to stick my neck out here and say that almost all the Doctor Who fans I know would have been on the Remain side and the anti-Trump side.
Absolutely.
And, you know, certainly it's kind of reassuring to sort of navigate the kind of Twitter sphere that I'm involved in, and you as well, Bob, to see that a lot of people feel the same way as we do.
Mm.
Of course, unfortunately, that becomes an echo chamber, particularly on Twitter, when if you only follow the people you agree with, you know, you get a kind of false view of what the rest of the world is thinking.
Yeah, and I've done that. I'm very guilty of that. I mean, I have had conversations, and this is what I don't mind. I've had conversations with people, you know, who did vote Brexit or did not necessarily Trump, because obviously it's not a mass thing to do with this. You know, they've got their rationale, they've got their reasons, and that's absolutely fine. You know, that's why you're allowed to vote. It's people that didn't really know what they were doing and people that just sort of went, I'm just doing it to give the big finger kind of thing.
Well, I hate foreigners.
I mean, they're just racists. Do you know what I mean? They're just jumping on a bandwagon.
Yeah.
You know, but there was people with genuine reasons who wanted to vote.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I've not really had a conversation with maybe one or two of them. You know, the predominantly, you know, people in my own family have just done it because of, really, because so-and-so said to do it, or there's no rationale behind it, there's no thought behind it. They saw the big red bus and all that kind of stuff. And yeah. I don't know, but we are where we are, Jim. Doctor Who and politics. Something about Doctor Who. I quite like talking about politics. Should we do a politics show? No, let's not do that. That'd be a horrendous idea.
Two listeners, thee and me.
But I think Doctor Who rises above that. So when you were saying before about, you know, friends in the community, the Doctor Who community, predominantly, they will have voted Remain, because what Doctor Who does, he embraces everyone of good. And, you know, not value, anyone who has a good heart, anyone that's trying to do the right thing, anyone with, you know, foibles as well. You know what I mean? He embraces the universe unless you're trying to destroy it, which is the right, you know, moral compass for me. And I think I get a lot of my moral compass from Doctor Who. And that's, to me, what politics should be about, just doing the right thing for the good people.
Mm. Yeah, well, I think, a lot of us who have loved the programme all our lives, you know, will have absorbed a kind of a world view or a universe view from, you know, how the Doctor approaches things. And that is one of inclusivity and of, you know, everybody being equal. And, you know, colour of skin, number of heads, number of limbs, whatever.
Is irrelevant.
Being no barrier to, you know, being able to get along. So, you know, unlike something like He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, where they, you know, very obviously gave you a moral lesson at the end. You know,
encourage steroids as well, to that.
But, you know, the Doctor manages to do that by stealth. And, you know, just because he's a character you admire, and you become to think, you know, that's how you should be. And I think as a moral guardian of people growing up in the 60s, 70s and 80s, I think Doctor did a very good job, and he probably is still continuing to do so. As a result, as I said, fairly, I don't, you know, it won't be 100%, but I think, you know, most Doctor Who fans will be of the same mind when it comes to, you know, a world view about how to treat other members of the, you know, other inhabitants of the planet.
Absolutely.
And, you know, not to be blinkered and prejudiced in as far as you can avoid being so.
Whichever way you voted, as long as you're not blinkered, prejudiced, and you embrace everyone until they're a dickhead, you know, that's what it's about, and that's Doctor Who.
That's the Doctor Who way, yeah.
Back of the net, as they say on Alan Partridge. Well, that was sorry about that political rant there, listeners. I just felt the need to share it, which I've never done before. So if I've offended anyone, I'm very sorry.
Yeah.
that's not true. I don't give a shit.
Yeah, I was going to say, you don't sound particularly sorry.
That's my opinion, and, you know, that's what all it is. It's an opinion. Mm. So, yeah.
Indeed. Well, let's leave that hot potato cooling off on the podcasting shelf.
Might take a while, Jim. Might take put your best oven gloves on. Oven mitts.
Your oven mitts of thought. This is getting torturous. Yeah, well, that probably is time for us to shut up, I would say.
It is, yes. Well, it's been a pleasure, as always, Jim Cameron.
Likewise, sir. And thanks for rejoining us, everyone, in 2017. There's plenty more of this to come from us. So,
Jim. Have we had any emails to our email address?
I haven't even checked, mate. I do get alerts, and I've got some alerts, but it's all Nigerian princes trying to lend us money.
What?
Yes.
let's borrow it. Yeah. What is our email address if anyone wants to write in?
That's a very good question. It is letterlords@mail.com. That's mail.com.
Or you could just tweet Quino Podcast or at Bo Fleming. I think that's my Twitter name. You'll find us anyway.
All complaints to at Bo Fleming. Any praise, if there is any, to at Quino Podcast, please.
And include the at Doctor Who Show as well. Which is what we're doing this for.
They are the mothership, the Doctor Who Show, aren't they? Rob is the mother in the mothership.
We are but the cadets.
Yeah, we are the tawdry offspring.
Well, I've been Bob Fleming from the Doctor Who Podcast. Thank you very much for listening.
I have been and remain Jim Cameron from the Quino Podcast. Yeah, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next month.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.